Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:01 p.m. and that is Pacific Standard Time, and today is December 10th. Crude oil today popped back above $50 for the first time since March. And considering that back in, was it March or April, that we saw negative prices on West Texas Intermediate, it got all the way down to minus 40, and now it's up to 46. So that's an $86 move in the space of 8 months, which is rather extraordinary by any stretch of the imagination. It does, of course, help to highlight just how panicky an environment we had back in April. But the reality now is that crude oil is breaking on the upside, and it has held this sequence of higher reaction lows for the last few months. It's been consolidating, or spent a good few months consolidating between July and November, and now it is breaking on the upside. Well, if we go back then and just look at the Brent price, because we don't have that spike, we can clearly see that there is an upward bias and that prices are still relatively depressed. Generally speaking, prices have not gone back below $40 for very long in all the time since the initial break above $40 back in the early 2000s. So then we can think about $40 being about as low as prices are likely to go. Even on occasions when there will be the occasional spike to the downside, they won't be sustained, for the very simple reason that when we think about what are the best way to define a bull market in commodities, or secular bull market in commodities, it's in terms of the rising cost of marginal production. The advent of China onto the world stage in the early 2000s greatly increased demand for oil, and it led to the demand cycle accelerating. So that necessitated a new investment wave in terms of new supply, and we got that. So a lot of new supply has come to market. Sources of supply that didn't previously exist also came to market, and when they came to market, it brought the price back down. And that's particularly true of both the shale sector and then also renewable energy, because in every bull market, you get new sources of supply coming to the market. Then you also get some substitution, because high prices, then they encourage some form of substitution. Well, that's what we've seen. That's why prices have pulled back so much. But it's still unlikely that we're going to see prices come back below $40 for any prolonged period of time, because new sources of demand will emerge. Whether that is for vehicles or whether it is in the chemical sector remains to be seen, but low prices will eventually encourage new demand cycles for oil. That's exactly what we've seen with natural gas. Natural gas prices have been confined to volatile ranging below about $4 now for most of the last few years, and below about $5 for the last decade. The price pulled back rather sharply over the last 3 or 4 weeks, but it was in positive territory in here today. Copper prices were also really rather firm in here today, and now they are pulling away from the peaks put in back in 2017 and 18. This looks like a very clear breakout. Now, when we think about the copper miners sector, there is an ETF, and copper miners have obviously been doing rather well. On aggregate, the ETF is now coming back up to test the 2017 and 18 peak, but then if we look at individual copper miners, then they've been doing substantially better. Antofagasta, for example, has been up in a very dynamic manner over the course of the last 2 or 3 weeks. When we then think about Freeport-McMoRan, then it has also clearly broken on the upside. Southern Copper has done even better, and that has been really rallying in a very dynamic manner off the lows in March and is at a new high as well. And that was following really very impressive performances in 2016 and 17. Then, of course, we have Rio Tinto, which has control of the Oyu Tolgoi mine in Mongolia, and it has pushed on now in a dynamic manner through the 70p level. So we're seeing an increasingly large, whoops, and that's in US dollars. So let's put that in local currency terms. We're seeing an increasingly large number of these companies doing really rather well. And particularly, I think it's worth highlighting the performance of Rio Tinto because it really did have a cataclysmic crash in 2008, going from 6,000 to below 1,000 in less than a year. Then we had this very impressive rebound and a very lengthy period of ranging. But since 2016, it has done nothing but rise, and it is on the cusp of pushing through to new all-time highs. So we are back in a demand-dominated environment. The sector has been through a very lengthy period of rationalization. I think one of the most attractive points about the commodity sector, and to a greater or lesser extent, the industrials sector, is that they've already been through their rationalization. They've taken the write-downs already, and their recovery plans were already in place ahead of the pandemic. So all they need to do now is follow through on their recovery plans, and they've also had the added advantage of being able to refinance any debt or to go to the market and source new funds at really rather accommodative levels. So they're in a rather sweet position. And we're seeing that it's not simply the exchange traded commodities are doing well. Iron ore prices have also popped on the upside, and this is, I think, a rather consistent move that we had a very mild consolidation in the region of the peak from 2019, and now prices are pushing back up again. This is in large part due to demand from China. And one thing that I've heard over the years, and it does make sense, is that when you're looking at what kind of investments will do best in which country, then it makes sense to look at those that the local people own, because those are the assets that are most likely to attract attention and support from the government during times of crisis. Well, in China, the stock market tends to be extraordinarily volatile, and it can rise and fall on very short-term bases, and also on the whim of government. The most popular asset to own in China is property. So property prices continue to do well. People continue to invest in properties. The budgetary constraints of local governments in China mean that they have to continue with land sales. Land sales only work if the people buying the land are willing to build on it. That's increasingly creating demand for infrastructure. Then, of course, on top of that just basic source of building an infrastructure, we have the additional point that China is engaging in a Green New Deal, and they're stockpiling copper. Then we also have the fact that Europe has it committed itself to a Green New Deal as well. Well, part of the reason for that is because of the demand from lobby groups and from various populations for green energy to be adopted. But then, of course, there's the additional point that it lends itself to achieving the goal of energy independence, and that is a top geopolitical priority for both Europe and for China. And copper demand is likely to be a very significant factor in that determination, for the simple reason that a 1 megawatt wind turbine needs 3 tons of copper. And when we think about the quantities of copper that are required for both electric vehicles and then electric charging facilities, those also represent very significant demand drivers. And of course, that's likely to create a demand upwell first before we get a commitment by miners to either invest in building out or in increasing capacity at existing facilities or investing the very huge resources required to go off and find new world-class resources to exploit. So we are potentially on the cusp, and it is looking increasingly likely just from the evidence on the charts that we are entering a new supply inelasticity meets rising demand market for industrial resources. But I think we are also in that same type of environment for agricultural commodities. So the sector that has not really yet been firing has been the grains and seeds and fertilizers. And this is another sector that has been through an incredibly difficult process of rationalization. And when we look at the fact that there has been this prolonged downtrend, there has been a very clear move by some of the big producers in the particularly in the former USSR to capture market share by flooding the market with potash, for example. That's also been the case with the rather lengthy process of consolidation that's been going on in the uranium sector because Kazakhstan has been flooding the market with uranium. We have better evidence of base formation development in uranium than we do in fertilizers, but one thing that we certainly have is that agricultural commodity prices are recovering, and the agricultural commodities themselves are rallying. So when we think about soybeans or sugar or corn or wheat, and they're all in recovery zones. And this does suggest that as prices recover, there will be demand from farmers for additional tools to stoke their ability to increase supply. Well, when we think about the nexus of infrastructure and then also the potential for demand for resources and agriculturals, well, CAT is continuing to extend its advance. John Deere has also been doing rather well, and it has been pushing through to new highs in a much more dynamic manner than CAT has. Well, what that is suggesting is that investors are certainly willing to give the benefit of the doubt to demand for extraction equipment. And when we then think about the wider commodity sector, the unweighted continuous commodity index is on the cusp of completing this base formation that's been underway now for 5 years. And it's right in the region of the 440 level. Every time it's got up to that area in the last 5 years, it's failed. So I think we are potentially now on the cusp of seeing commodities push on the upside in a more dynamic manner. Then the big question for many investors right now is what can we expect from the Brexit negotiations? Things are coming down to the wire, and the pound pulled back rather sharply against the euro in here today. It's back below 110, and 110 is a bit of a psychological Rubicon. When investors are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to some form of accommodation between the UK and the EU, then at the pound rallies above 110. When they're less confident about that conclusion, it falls. And it was down in a dynamic manner today on the back of Boris Johnson telling people that they need to prepare for a hard Brexit. Well, this is a big question, and it is likely to be highly disruptive. Eventually, there will be an accommodation. The two neighboring economies where they do a lot of trade between each other, there will eventually be some form of accommodation. But the bigger question is whether people are going to be, or whether governments are going to be willing to make the sacrifices necessary to get the deal done when they don't have the visceral experience of going through the pain and suffering. That's the big question, because in order to make the concession, they have to be able to sell it to their populations. And if populations have voted for one thing in the expectation that it will turn out to be a good decision, well, it may yet turn out to be a good decision in the long term, but that doesn't mean that there won't be pain in the short term. And then if there is the need for some form of compromise, well, people don't generally feel inclined to compromise until they really feel like they have to. And that does suggest that we may be in for some additional volatility. Now, businesses obviously are very interested in ensuring that there is some form of accommodation, but businesses don't get to vote. People do. And I think that is one of the more pressing issues that is on the minds of investors, but also of politicians. One thing that I think we can clearly conclude is that mid-caps in Europe tend to do substantially better than the large caps. Now, they do tend to be more volatile, but the reality is that large caps were not spared a big decline earlier this year, and they don't tend to rally as much as the mid-caps. That's as true for the MDAX in Germany as it is for the FTSE 250 in the UK, and the MDAX is pushing on to new highs. The one redeeming quality that both Europe and the UK have is that valuations are reasonably attractive, particularly on a relative basis to the USA. And what they need is a growth strategy. The UK has probably got an easier route to achieving a growth strategy or a new productivity strategy than the EU, for the simple reason that once they leave the EU, they only have to agree among themselves without having to have a plan agreed by all the various parliaments within the EU. They also have the freedom to compete aggressively on a regulatory and taxation front in the event of a hard Brexit. And that could then be also achieved from the position of a much weaker currency. So there is certainly the potential that the UK can really compete on a very sharply mercantilist perspective. But perhaps the best way to do that would be from a significantly weaker currency environment overall. But then there is the obviously potential for a nominal price appreciation in the stock market if the currency goes down. But from an international perspective, then the relative attraction of buying before the decision isn't quite as attractive. So it may be just time to sit on the sidelines from an international perspective, but then there will likely be opportunities from a domestic perspective. But the reality is that emerging markets tend to have better growth already. They get the rising productivity simply by virtue of the fact that you've got lots of young, dynamic people entering the market who get to use up-to-date technology. That emerging markets generally tend to be able to skip whole stages of development because they can just implement the newest practices. Then, if we think about how some of those emerging markets are performing, well, the Nifty index continues to push higher. And it is one of a reasonably small number of markets that is at new all-time highs. Then Indonesia continues to also rebound and is back in the region of the peaks from back in 2018 and 19. So it's a little overbought in the short term, and we may yet see some pause in consolidation. One thing that will certainly be, I think, or there'll be an awareness among investors is that the quantity of negative yielding debt is still at new highs of about 17.8 trillion. Australia has moved into the negative yielding territory. Now, the stock market there has got a very similar price chart to the majority of indices around the world, where you have the big decline and then subsequent rebound. But when we look at the bond markets, then we can just, sorry, that didn't work. We can look at the overall yields that we have on Australian bonds, and the 2-year is at 8 basis points right now. The first debt issued by Australia with negative yields was yesterday. So there is the clear scope that we're looking at a global environment where interest rates are likely to stay down for a prolonged period. Governments don't really have a lot of choice. They have to invest in reflation. It's just not an election, it's just not any kind of policy that is going to be tolerated by investors if they're going to let millions of people unemployed. That's as true of places in Europe as it is of the USA or in Australia or indeed anywhere else. So we're likely to be in a liquidity-rich environment with low interest rates for the lengthy medium term. And that's regardless of what happens with inflation. With commodities starting to push higher and with the potential for demand to start to return in a big way next year, then we're likely to be in a negative real interest rate environment for a lengthy period of time. That is an ideal scenario for gold because it bolsters the attraction of real assets, and the price is did not follow through on the downside following yesterday's downward dynamic. It was down mildly in here today, but it is still holding the region of the trend mean. Silver prices are also still holding the lower side of this, or at least holding below the $25 level. They do need to push back above $25 and sustain the move in order to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. The more industrially oriented precious metals have been firmer, and platinum was up 20 today and held the psychological 1,000 level. If platinum can continue to hold that $1,000 level, well, then we can conclude that we are looking at base formation completion. And then when we think about the gold miners, well, they're right in the region of the trend mean. So this is certainly a potential area where we can anticipate support continuing to be found, but they do have some work to do in order to clearly demonstrate that support has in fact been found. Now, as we then think about what's going on in the USA, well, the S&P 500 was in mildly negative territory today, but it's been very quiet over the course of the last couple of weeks. Airbnb was one of the new listings today, and the share doubled right off the open, but wasn't quite able to hold all of the gain. Quite whether the share is in fact worth $100 billion, I think, is rather unlikely, but Airbnb is one of the most hotly anticipated IPOs in quite some time. There is likely to be a fair amount of trading around it. But then when we think about, well, who does it compete with? Well, I think the clear candidates are Booking.com or Expedia, and both of those shares are in the region of their previous peaks. So at least the sector is recovering, and that is potentially better for the outlook for Airbnb overall. Then DoorDash has also IPO'd, and the share was up in a dynamic manner, up almost 80% on the first day of trading, held it in here today. When we think about the fundamentals of the company, I find it really rather interesting that they anticipate being cash flow positive next year. I'm really rather skeptical of that conclusion. I just don't imagine that people are going to continue to want to have food delivered and to pay for it, or that the restaurant sector is going to continue to share their margins with delivery companies. And it will, in order for the company to really succeed, then dark kitchens are going to have to become a much more significant portion of the restaurant environment. And that is not something that is likely to, or that kind of transition is probably going to take years rather than months. So, but nonetheless, if you're going to IPO your company, this is probably about the best time possible because there is such an incredible amount of liquidity floating around. And we just don't have a lot of avenues for outsized growth promises. So there is plenty of performance in terms of the stock markets overall, particularly in the emerging markets, because that is definitely where we have growth. Then, when we think about the growth potential from new technology companies, well, the chances are that most of their growth is already behind them. When we think about the fact that Airbnb is already a global franchise, the only way that they're going to compete is to start selling hotel rooms for hotel chains. And then they're not really much more than a booking company, just like Expedia or Booking.com. So then you're in a much more competitive environment, and they're going after a more difficult customer. When we then think about the government bond sector, well, yields have pulled back a little in here today, and the stock market is really holding its breath. So is the bond market at the prospect of an additional stimulus surge from the USA. I think it is largely inevitable that it will happen. It's only really a question of whether we get it before or after Christmas, or indeed after the extraordinary election in Georgia for the two open Senate seats. If we think about the medium term, we are in a liquidity-rich environment, and the dollar is under pressure. There isn't a real commitment to adopt fiscal austerity, and this does look like a clear downward trend, even if the dollar is oversold in the very short term. I do think, though, that any substantial rally in the dollar is likely to be a shorting opportunity for the foreseeable future, and that is also one of the primary tailwinds for the commodity complex and for interest in emerging markets, because now they have the currency on their side as well. I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.